Hi, this is Redbeard in the studio. Predictably, the induction of Journey into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on Friday night has rekindled several obvious questions with loyal fans. Among them, why did the much-beloved and enormously successful 80s-era lineup, fronted by singer-co-writer Steve Perry, disband? After having a major debut solo album, Street Talk, in 1984, why did Steve Perry wait 10 years before releasing another one? With all of the other Journey alumni very visibly active in recording and touring projects after the late 80s breakup of Journey, why did Steve Perry disappear? And most importantly, who is the mysterious late-night radio DJ, the Love Monkey? And what connection could he have to the answers to all of these questions? This, too, shall be revealed in my July 1994 interview with Steve Perry here in the studio.
Nice to see you, too. Well, we got together during the interviews for the box set, the Journey box set. You came out to Los Angeles. We sat in a hotel for a few hours. You know, I want you to know across the country, I don't know if you coined that phrase, but people are crediting you for the MIA thing. You were rock and roll's MIA. What happened to you, you said? You're the only one of your class that didn't continue. Well, I'll tell you what happened. I did the Street Talk album, and then that took about 6 months. And then I turned around. That was my time off. Yeah, I did. I took the time, made my solo album. Then I went back to San Francisco and wrote the Rage Time Radio record, recorded it, and then toured behind it, too. And then at the end of that tour, that punctuated 10 years with the band.
You should have been gone, knowing how I made you feel. And I should have been gone after all your words of steel. I must have been a dreamer, and I must have been someone else, and we should have been over. Oh, Sherry, hold on, hold on, hold on.
First time up to the plate as a solo artist, Steve Perry parked that one in the bleachers and touched all the bases with Oh Sherry from his 1984 debut, Street Talk. I asked Steve Perry to run the numbers for me.
I don't really know now. I think it's 3 million now. 3 million. I think so. Yeah, well, I know that Neil had done two solo albums in the course of the journey path that we were on. And then so finally, when we took the break after the Frontiers tour on the 1st of September that year, we took 30 days off and I moved to L.A. the 1st of October specifically to go ahead and just make one of my records because I'd never made a solo record. I figured, you know, he made a couple. I think I'd make one. You know, so I did. And then I that would have been an opportune time to leap off into a solo career, but I had an obligation emotionally, I think, to go back and do another record with the guys. So we did the Reznor Radio album and tour. And then at the end of that, that was 10 years.
Yeah.
One of the most romantic, sensuous songs in the Journey canon from 1985's Raised on Radio album. It's the gorgeous The Eyes of a Woman, co-written by Jonathan Cain, Neil Sean, and Steve Perry. Journey's enormous popularity from 1978 to 1988 required a Super Bowl mentality and a professional pace be maintained in order to meet the voracious appetite of fans and record companies and concert promoters alike, leaving precious little time for the members of Journey to address real-life responsibilities. That notorious pace had already cost them one key member, Journey co-founder Greg Raleigh. The end of the protracted Raised on Radio tour in the conspicuously un-California setting of Anchorage, Alaska, seemed so symbolic on many levels to Steve Perry.
Well, that's because it's just that's where it ended. But I know that you're right about all of it. It had to do with all those things. I think, emotionally, I think the band was at a certain place, too. You know, I was no picnic in the park, no doubt, but nobody was a day at the beach. You know what I'm saying? We were a band, and there were times as bands where you're the Rolling Stones and you're, you know, Keith and Mick or whatever, you know, you snarl at each other like a couple of dogs because you travel so much together and you live in rent-a-cars and breakfast places and lunches and, you know, travel everywhere together. So 10 years of traveling really hard, as you know, 10 months we'd tour and then we'd do an album tour for another year. We worked hard. One of the hardest working bands there was. Well, we would play everywhere just because we loved playing, you know? And so there was a lot of emotional, I think, singe marks, I think, on the whole thing. But I also think creatively, just for me, there was nothing else I had to say creatively at that moment. I could have went into, like, life support creatively. You know what I'm saying by that? I mean, we could have just, like, pumped it up and just continued to crank out that sound and that stuff. But something new was in the wings, and I didn't feel like it was in me at that point. And then my personal life was a whole nother thing where I just had to stop. You know, during the making of the Razor Radio tour, my mother died, and during vocals. So I jumped back into my life for a second there, of course, because life just pulled me right back, said, this is what you got to take care of. So I did that, and next thing I know, I'm back up to San Francisco finishing the album, mixing the album, Raised on Radio record, rehearsing and auditioning drummers for the tour, touring behind the record, which last thing I remember was a blur that ended in Anchorage, Alaska. And I knew a few weeks before the end of that segment there that ended in Anchorage that I just had to leap off. I wasn't quite sure where I was going, but I knew where I couldn't stay anymore for a while. So that's when the first year sort of went by quick, and almost the second year too, by just living in my house, sleeping in my bed with my pillowcase. You know, I didn't.
That was a novel thing for you after 10 years.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, living in a suitcase with toothbrush. I want you to know I'm not complaining at all. That was the best times of my life, and I enjoy every, and I have no regrets. I would do it again tomorrow if somebody said, would you relive that period? I'd say, yeah. Just like it is if they asked me, I says, yes, I wouldn't change a thing, you know, if I could do that, because it was a great time of my life.
Tired of being alone, but will my lonely
Steve Perry's Foolish Heart from 1984's Street Talk album.
No, I recorded music after that second
year. Well, you sure did.
After that second year, I started going to the studios occasionally with friends and recording music. And I have I just have a lot of stuff. Some of it's even in some demo forms, which sounds really great, that is masterable. And then a lot of it was done in actual studios. What's going to happen with that is, in fact, I was listening to some of it last night. I have DATs have been FedExed to me, and I've been listening to the digital audio tapes of those mixes. I'm going to pick three for now that I'm going to release, and we're going to do what's called a CD5, which is basically release the single You Better Wait on a CD, because right now you can only buy the single on a cassette. I'm going to release it on a CD. And I'm going to add three unreleased tracks to that whole thing, and I'm going to start doing that from here on out, because there's a backlog of that's almost a diary of those times, emotionally in the music. I'm not talking too much about the times, but emotionally you can tell there's a different situation going on.
To find
Steve Perry's melodic It Won't Be You raises the rhetorical question as to what exactly constitutes a demo when the music is this fully realized. Demo? Really? Well, after you listen to Steve Perry's real-world inspiration for the 1994 song You Better Wait, you may look at the person on the corner with a little more compassion next time.
And also, she looked like she was doing things that she had to do to survive on the street. And it was sad. And I'm sitting at the red light waiting, you know, and all of a sudden I start to think maybe she was a beauty queen from a small town and maybe things didn't work out the way she planned. And then I thought maybe her pride won't let her go back home because, you know, it didn't turn out the way she did. So she's stuck in this trap to where she won't go back. And that's the pride trap that could take her out. And so when we were writing the song, you know, she was 17, a beauty queen. I met her in a magazine, came right out from the very beginning.
She was lonely, a child, someone to hold on, only a child, someone to believe in.
Chorus, of course, says you better wait to stop yourself before you fall. You better wait to stop before you lose it all, because somewhere there's love. So that's where the hope comes back.
Beauty queen, I'm
song. Four on the Floor from Steve Perry on You Better Wait from 1994 solo album For the Love of Strange Medicine. But the operative word for Steve Perry fans by that time was wait. His prolonged absence from public recording and performing spawned all kinds of conjecture and rumor, such as the persistent one that said that Steve Perry had an entire unreleased album on the shelf. But Steve corrected that notion.
Three. Three records. I have one that's actually a record that was done in segments in the studio. And then I'd say the other two have been done in different places. And some of those songs were done after the between the chronology of this gets a little sticky, but I jumped in the studio at the beginning and started recording record stuff, and then I stopped, and then I started rewriting with some different people and recorded some of that stuff, but not necessarily all in studio qualities, but good quality stuff. And then I got to the point where I ran into Paul Taylor on keyboards, and we started writing songs. And then I ran to Lincoln Brewster, this young guitar player who was 21 years old, who's now going to squeak up to the age of 23, the little whatever. Anyway, he's a talented little guy, and the three of us were writing together. And then we ran into Moyes Lucas Jr., who just came in one day and stuck his head in rehearsal and said he heard we were looking for a drummer. And next thing I knew, I says, we'll come back an hour, and we jam, and we jammed. And the first thing he laid down with this incredible drum pocket that grew to be a song called Listen to Your Heart, which is on the For the Love of Strange Medicine record. So I wrote a lot of stuff, recorded a lot of stuff until I met those guys. Then I made this record, which just was put together in a studio about 8 months ago. Wow. Well, you know, there's music, and then there's the music business. You know, and I mean, that could open up a can of worms. But, you know, I would love to, and let's face it, a box set from me, it's going to be, I don't know if anybody wants that much Steve Perry in their life.
I don't know.
It's been a long drought. Well, yeah, drought. Oh, God, I wish that was the case. But, yeah, I do have a lot of stuff laying around, and it's going to start falling and filtering through the cracks as I can squeeze in it, because there'll be another CD fire for the second single, which I'll do some more, and third and fourth. So there'll be stuff coming, unreleased stuff, yeah. I'm a painter, okay? What I do is I paint and then I stop and then I put it in the basement and I go paint some more. You know? I don't think there's no rhyme or reason to the creative process when it starts to come back. Well, because I always thought that being a DJ would be the coolest thing. When I was a teenager, listen, it's true. When I was a teenager, I thought that, you know, first of all, back up, there was a trailer sitting out in the middle of this field in my hometown area in central San Joaquin Valley. And I thought if I could get on this station, it felt like it was the closest thing to the music business. And now looking back, I was actually right, because you guys, you're one step away from the whole business. You know, people come to you. So I was right in that sense, but I was wrong in the fact that when I tried to get a job there, I found out you had to have a third class license back then in order to work. So they said, go up to the city and take your test. You're at the FCC. So I went up to take the test and I flunked it. I flunked the test. Oh, years ago, before I got into Journey, you know. And then as years have gone on now, as you know, if somebody like yourself, they just sign you on, you fill in our thing, send it in. So now I've got my third class license coming, and I'm going to be doing a late night show somewhere from 12 to 2. I'm serious. I'm serious. And I don't. Maybe there'll be some times, like if I had a night off tomorrow, if I was in town doing a gig tonight and I had a night off tomorrow, you might hear me on the station at 12 to 2, just me and you, love songs with a love monkey.
You are on. You are on.
Okay.
You come back.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to it. But you can't promo it, though, you see?
If you
can't tell who it is.
You can have my show.
Do you work 12 to 2 at night on Saturday night?
No.
That's it. The bar closes at 2 anyway, so...